Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, May 4th edition of Talkback. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls, producing Talkback. Good morning, Mr. Nick. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good.
A brand new week, and we have a house full of guests, and including the one on the phone. And we're going to be talking with folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority. And big doings going on this week here in Missoula with the Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference, which actually starts on the 7th, goes through the 10th. Here in Missoula at the Hilton Garden Inn. And on the phone this morning, we have, I believe, Bill Federer, president of the IBA. Bill, good morning, sir, and welcome. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You should have his bio there. He's a part of American Minute, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Exactly. We do have the president of the IBA here, though.
I wish he would be president. Bill, did you hear that?
Dr. Horton, well, yeah. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
All right, tell us a little bit about the Institute for Biblical Authority, if you would, please.
No, that'd be us.
That's them.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Bill's with American Minute. He'll be joining us. We only have 3 minutes before this break here, so maybe, Mike, you want to talk about the conference, and then Dr. Horton, you can talk about IBA.
Okay. Go for it.
You bet. Right. Good morning, everybody, and great to be on with you again. Congratulations on statewide coverage. That is so exciting. You do such an excellent job. Listen to you every morning. Big fan. So, yeah, the Institute for Biblical Authority is bringing a conference into Missoula again. This is a national conference. We have an arrangement of speakers, including Bill Federer. We're so honored to have him coming back to Missoula. He's a nationally known speaker and has written so many books and an authority on so many different things. But we've got 6 nationally known speakers coming in to cover a variety of topics. And you're right, it's going to be at the Hilton. And this national conference is going to be May 7th through the 9th, really. And then we send our speakers out to churches around the area. But May 7th, this is National Day of Prayer.
Wow, cool.
And it just happened to fall on this weekend, so we said, we got to do something.
Yeah.
We've never done a National Day of Prayer. It's been a lot of fun preparing that. We've got a worship team coming in from various churches. We're going to have prayer and some authors and presentations. But this conference, guys, is going to be celebrating, of course, Jesus, our Creator, Savior, and truth in the gospel, because the world, we believe at IBA, the world needs that. And but secondly, big year. 250th anniversary of our nation, and we're going to be celebrating the biblical and Christian foundations of America, too. So a lot of those topics and conversations and sessions will be gearing around science supporting the Bible and our 250th anniversary of our nation and our biblical foundations there.
So tell us a little bit about the origin of this organization, if you would, please.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because myself, this is Dr. Horton. I was a veterinarian in the Bitterroot Valley for 20 years.
Right.
And crazy enough, and that's a whole other story, I became a pastor. And so I went back to school for theology and all that. And as I'm preaching and teaching, I am seeing that there is this gap in people's knowledge of science and the Bible. And there seems to be this disconnect that, well, science is over here, Bible's over here, and science, that's what we know to be true and Bible's faith. And there's
what we hope to be true.
Yeah, we hope to be true, exactly.
Okay,
right.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. And what we find, though, is as a scientist, I'm finding that modern-day science actually confirms the biblical basis very strongly. And that's what we're all about, is to help people understand that you can't trust the Bible. And one of those things that I'll be talking about will be the Glacial Lake Missoula flood right here. And that'll be coming up on, what is that, Friday morning, 11:30. I'll be talking about that.
And we have a commercial break coming up here, the first of several, as we continue in our time together. So if you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. The folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority joining us here in the studio and on the phone. So please stay with us. We'll be right back after this quick timeout here on TalkBack.
Gosh, I hate that.
TalkBack is sponsored.
If you had to work over the weekend, don't worry. We've saved some sun for you as well. Dennis Bragg with your forecast as we look at warm, dry spring conditions persisting pretty much all week. Mostly sunny Monday through Thursday. Just a few afternoon clouds and calm winds as well. Afternoon highs will be in the mid to upper 60s today and tomorrow, so a little cooler than over the weekend. But by Wednesday, we'll be back into the mid 70s, even a few upper 70s toward the end of this week. Friday will be partly sunny, then back to clouds in the evening with a chance of rain returning next weekend.
Battery pop quiz. Did you know that most rechargeable devices use lithium-ion batteries? They're in laptops, power banks, and more. They can, however, be a fire risk. So power up your battery smarts with tips from the National Fire Protection Association. Only buy products with a safety certification mark. Charge devices on hard surfaces. Don't use off-brand cords, and always unplug when fully charged. Let's charge into fire safety. Visit fpw.org/battery for more tips.
Hey, we are back on Talkback. Love the bumper music. It's awesome. All right. Welcome back, everybody. And again, the folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority are joining us here in the studio and on the phone. And Harry is already on the line with a question or a comment. So, Harry, good morning. Please, what's your question, please? Go ahead.
Yeah, this I'm on. Oh, this is Harry. Good morning, gentlemen. I got several things. But first off, you claim that, you know, the country is based on, you know, biblical standing. That's, some of it is true, but there's a big part that isn't. I mean, there's First Amendment compared to the First Commandment. The First Commandment is, thou shalt have no God before me. And the First Amendment is, you can worship whoever you want to, basically. So, I mean, they kind of, I always have this proposition to anybody who says that is, I'll give you $100. We'll go through the Bible. I'll give you $100 for every place that says that it's okay to worship another god or have another religion. And you can give me $20 for every place that it says that it isn't, and we'll see who goes out first. And the second point is, you people worship the Bible. That's how I look at it. But I'm, as an agnostic, I say, you really don't follow it all, though, because there's parts of it that you don't. There's one major thing. I don't hear you people calling for the death penalty for gays. That's Leviticus. It says, thou, you know, any man who sleeps with another man shall be put to death, and his blood shall be upon them. So that's right there. There's no, you know, context. That's pretty straightforward. So I don't understand why you don't call the death penalty for gays if you believe the Bible is true.
All right. Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, please.
Well, Harry, those are two interesting little observations on your part. First is, do we believe that the United States of America is to be a biblical republic where the Bible is king? No, it isn't that we're saying that, nor do we say that the history is that, but the history is based upon people who do believe, and in fact, as people who follow the biblical concepts in a nation, it works to have a republic form of government. But when you have a people that do not do that, then chaos tends to ensue. And as we rebel against biblical standards, just in society, not necessarily that we're following the Bible per se, but just standards of morality, we find that it tends towards chaos. Okay, so we don't believe that the Constitution says follow the Bible. That's not true at all. But we find that in the constitutional republic, it works much better, and it actually has its basis on biblical concepts. Now, the second thing you talked about was some of the Old Testament rules and regulations versus our society. Those, you have to understand, in Leviticus, that is the constitution of the nation of Israel as it was growing up. And we're not Israel, okay? We're United States of America. So our Constitution is separate and different. And that Constitution was theirs. Now, when you get to the New Testament, we are under a time of grace that passes on to people. But that doesn't mean that the nation doesn't have rules and regulations and laws. And we do believe in a nation of laws. And that is designed to be chosen by the people of the United States of America. So it isn't like we demand the Old Testament constitution be put on the United States at all. Not at all. But we're under a time of grace, and that's a different time.
I think it might
I have a few comments I could throw in there.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, Bill, it might be good to bring you in here because those are some of the topics Bill will be addressing at the conference.
Right. Yeah.
So take it away, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah, so every colony was started by a different Christian denomination. Virginia was Anglican. Massachusetts was Puritan. Rhode Island was Baptist. New York was Dutch Reformed. Connecticut and New Hampshire were Congregationalist. Maryland Catholic, Pennsylvania Quaker. And they didn't get along, but they worked together against the king. When we became a new nation, each state had its requirements to hold office. And now these were the states that wrote the Constitution of the U.S. and ratified it. So Delaware, in 1776, its state constitution said, every person appointed to office shall subscribe. I profess faith in God the Father, Jesus Christ, his only Son, the Holy Ghost, one God, bless forevermore, and I acknowledge the scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. Ben Franklin signed the 1776 Pennsylvania Constitution, which says every office holder shall make the declaration, I believe in one God, creator and governor of the universe, reward of the good, punisher of the wicked, and acknowledge the scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. New Jersey, the third state to ratify the Constitution, had in its state constitution all persons professing a belief in the faith of any Protestant sect shall be capable of being elected. Georgia in 1777 said representatives are to be chosen out of each county and they shall be of the Protestant religion. You could go on and on. Massachusetts, John Adams wrote the Constitution that said every office holder had to declare, I believe in the Christian religion and have a firm persuasion of its truth. Maryland in 1776 state constitution said no other test is required to hold office than an oath of support to the state and a declaration of belief in the Christian religion. South Carolina, 1778 constitution, no person shall be eligible to seat in the House unless he be of the Protestant religion. The Christian Protestant religion shall be deemed the established religion of this state. I could go on and on, but clearly America was established a Christian nation on the state level, and the states were fearful that the federal government would pick one denomination and make it the national one, which is what every other country in the world did. Germany was Lutheran, Switzerland Calvinist, Scotland Presbyterian, England Anglican. Their fear was that America would pick one denomination as the national one, and these states were very jealous of their own denominations, and so they put a First Amendment to tie the federal government's hands. Why? Because religion was under each individual state's jurisdiction. And that's where you get Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story. So the whole power over the subject of religion is left exclusively to the state constitutions.
All right. And gentlemen, we have a little less than a minute before we have to take a quick commercial break. And Rick is waiting very patiently on the phone. The folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority are joining us both on the phone and here in the studio. And they'll be here with us until 9 o'clock this morning. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Don't forget the Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference is coming up May 7th through the 10th. It's going to be at the Hilton Garden Inn. So we hope that if you're interested in that you will attend. I'm assuming admission is free. You bet. Absolutely.
It is free.
Good, good, good. All right, so we're going to come right back and continue with this conversation with you, hopefully. Joining us at 721-1290. We'll be right back after this quick timeout here on TalkBack. Welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. We have representatives from the folks who are putting on the Institute for Biblical Authority. There's a Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference coming up later on this week at the Hilton Garden Inn. And we do have Rick waiting on the line. Rick, good morning. What's your question for our guests, sir? Please go ahead.
I don't have a question about religion and state. I have a question about religion versus religion. The Old Testament, I think we can agree that there'd be no New Testament without the Old Testament. The Old Testament has prophecies and prophets like King David and Jeremiah, so on and so forth. There are particularly rules in the Old Testament that some churches, Catholic, Protestant, Islam, they like to still follow some of the Old Testament rules. But the ones they don't like, they change the narrative, like the days of the week that you like Shabbat's on Saturday, but most Christian religion, their basic Shabbat is on Sundays. Why do religions believe that it's okay to change the core beliefs of what our faith in Jesus Christ and in God? Why do they believe it's okay to change the rules to match their narratives?
All right.
Prophecy was given to the Jews by Yahweh, all these should be seen through the prism of Judaism. And it does say in many chapters of the Bible that Israel will come one day to accept the Messiah. And I think if the world understood that, there'd be much less corruption, much less war in the world. But we tend to just hate the Jews, but we don't know what prophecy actually says about the Jews.
All right, thanks for the call. So, gentlemen, your thoughts, please.
Well,
a myriad of things there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. For one thing, I would agree with you that Israel will one day accept the Messiah, and we're probably on the same page on that concept. And when you talk about the Sabbath on the Saturday or Sunday, it appears like you probably have a Seventh-day Adventist bent, and that's that. I don't have any trouble with that. One of the things we do observe in the New Testament, for instance, the Apostle John, when he starts the book of Revelation, he says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. And what happened with the New Testament saints is, especially the Jewish saints, is they became believers in the Messiah, Jesus, but they would often go to synagogue on Saturday, the Sabbath, or Shabbat, as you would say. And then they would meet together after work on Monday, or Sunday. Sunday was a work day, like our Monday. And they would meet together in the evenings afterwards to celebrate the Resurrection Day. And so as Christians, a lot of the Christian denominations, some hold, like yours, Seventh-day Adventists, I assume, but I don't know for sure, would hold to, hey, we're going to stay on the Sabbath, the original Sabbath. And a lot of the Christian denominations say, you know, we'd rather celebrate the resurrection of Christ. And so that's become the tradition.
All right. Anything else, gentlemen? All right. So let's continue. We thank you for the call so far. By the way, the phone lines are open at 721-1290. But let's continue with more about the conference and who's going to be there and what you're hoping to accomplish.
You bet. Thank you. Peter. So, Bill, I would like you to comment on some of the things that you'll be talking about at the conference. We're so lucky to have you back, and we just heard about your busy schedule, so thanks for coming back to Montana. Bill has written a book, Who is King in America? And in an hour, he can go through a lot of history, 6,000 years of history. And he also covers socialism and the history of socialism. And how America is unique in some of those ways. You know, those topics come out a lot. I heard a statistic the other day that young people, over 50%+ of young people under 30 think socialism is the answer.
Wow.
And it's the right way to go. So, Bill, first, let's comment a little bit on that, because that's what you'll be talking about. Do you mind, Bill?
Yeah, we have about 2 minutes before the break, so go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, socialism is a counterfeit Christianity. And it is starts with Plato, and so first it talks about everybody, everything in common. Until you think through, somebody has to be in the government handing out the common stuff, and they're always going to be tempted to give a little extra to their family and friends on the side, and hold back from someone they don't like, and it gets discretionary. And the saying is, "He who holds the purse strings has the power." So every attempt at everybody owning everything equally always ends up with a deep state bureaucracy, with those in charge passing out favors to their friends and weaponizing the government against their enemies. And that's the pattern. The French Revolution, their motto was liberty, equality, fraternity. Sounds good, doesn't work. Liberty is experienced individually. Fraternity is their word for socialism, the collective, the group. And when the benefit of the collective outweighs the benefit of the individual, then the collective can crush your individual liberties, confiscate your property, redistribute it, and kill you. And so France is the modern example of the birth of socialism. And again, it turns into a elite ruling class that runs everything, and it sounds good on paper, but when it's acted out, it never works.
All right, we are coming up against another break. We're talking with folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority. There is a Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference coming up on May 7th through the 10th. It's going to be here at the Hilton Garden Inn. We'll be talking about that. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just mentioned in Missoula because we're statewide. So
yes, thank you.
Multiple Hilton Garden Inn. So
we're
we'll
statewide
be in Missoula.
Now.
my producer keeps me on track. Absolutely. So please feel free to give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And these gentlemen would love to hear from you as well at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us on Talkback on this Monday, May the 4th.
In a world of complications.
If you had to work over the weekend, don't worry, we've saved some sun for you as well. Dennis Bragg with your forecast as we look at warm, dry spring conditions persisting pretty much all week. Mostly sunny Monday through Thursday, just a few afternoon clouds and calm winds as well. Afternoon highs will be in the mid to upper 60s today and tomorrow, so a little cooler than over the weekend. But by Wednesday, we'll be back into the mid 70s, even a few upper 70s toward the end of this week. Friday will be partly sunny, then back to clouds in the evening with a chance of rain returning next weekend.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource. We have each other.
Visit goredforwomen.org today to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Talk Back for this Monday, and we're talking with folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority, the Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference coming up May 7th through the 10th here in Missoula at the Hilton Garden Inn. And we do have lots of folks waiting to talk with you gentlemen on the phone, and I believe Skip is first. Skip, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you, Peter. Hope you all had a nice weekend. It's a beautiful sunny morning down here in the Bitterroot. And I've run into Dr. Horton, I think, at least once in the last little while, the last few months, and that was at a meet and greet for a candidate for our Supreme Court, who would have been Dan Wilson. And then Dr. Horton, especially, I remember you as a fine veterinarian down here in the Bitterroot. I know a lot of people that miss you when you went out of that profession. In addition, it seems like if you could tell us and if any affiliation you have, I'll say politically, for instance, it seems like at least one of you was at a meeting that we had down here at our fairgrounds about the Convention of States. And is there any parallel or any connection that we should be aware of about your whole entity and where we should go, for instance, in this election cycle? How can we pull it together so that we can all be on a better page of being aware of? I'm making this a general statement, so you can take off with it wherever you want to.
All right.
So thank you for letting me tell you that.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
For the call. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you, Skip. I appreciate hearing that I was missed as a veterinarian, and I'm missed as a pastor too at times in those two roles. But I find this role that I'm in is very critical. And when you talk about politics, would I characterize myself Republican or Democrat or aware or independent or whatever? The way I characterize myself is I vote biblical concepts and morality. And so it isn't that hard to listen to a particular candidate, whether it's for the Supreme Court or for governor or for a local representative or national, and just hear what their agenda is, what's their platform, compare it to biblical morality and even just basic human morality, And that's what I let fall. That's what I follow. And that's what I tell people to follow. Now, listen to what they have to say. Don't just get emotional, but actually listen to what they say and think about what are the consequences of those ideas. And that's like what Bill Federer says. You know, that a lot of these ideas have sound good on paper, but have terrible consequences. And so if we stay with the biblical concepts of morality, we generally find ourselves in a much better culture than in a culture that is going off in, as Bill Federer just said, socialism. It sounds good on paper, but in reality doesn't work very well. Any comments on that, Bill?
Yeah. You know, people say, well, wasn't the early church socialist? No, the early church was the early church. Socialism is counterfeit early church. And the difference is between the word voluntary and involuntary. So the early believers had private property, and they sold it and laid it at the feet of the apostles. They didn't have the Roman government take it away and lay it at the feet of Pilate. Here, Pilate, here's a little more money for the Roman government to spread your empire around. No, so the voluntary versus involuntary is sort of a big deal. It's sort of the whole reason God made us, right? We're free will creatures. We're not robots and zombies. And so I can go on and on, but the important thing to realize is that socialism doesn't work. Lenin said socialism is simply a transition phase to communism. So you got capitalism on the one side with private property. Communism, Marx and Engels said, can be summed up in one sentence: abolition of private property. And then socialism is the transition phase from individuals owning private property to gradually giving it up and not having any, in the state controlling it all.
Wow. So we have about a minute left before we take a break. So any?
Yeah, I would please love to, Peter. I'd like to share some of the topics that we're going to have. Now, of course, we have National Prayer Day Thursday night at the Hilton. That starts at 7 o'clock. There will be a Glacial Lake Missoula flood field trip with Michael Ord out of Bozeman and Dr. Horton. And then Saturday, we have a track of Science Supports the Bible, because we became convicted that this was an important topic, because you hear that science has disproven the Bible. Well, it's just the opposite. Just about every discipline in science, and we're scientists, although sometimes we get questioned about that, every discipline of science supports the Bible: geology, biology, et cetera, et cetera.
We're going to come right back. We have a quick timeout, and these folks will be with us till 9 o'clock this morning, so give us a call at 721-1290. We'll be right back after this timeout.
Childhood cancer is the leading cause of death by disease for children in our country. We can do something about that. We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org.
My name is Emma. After a car accident left me paralyzed, Canine Companions teamed me up with my service dog, Marcia. For 50 years, Canine Companions has been teaming dogs together with those who need them the most. Visit canine.org to change lives.
We're back on Talk Back. Thanks for joining us this morning. And the folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority joining us here in the studio and on the phone. And Bill, I know you wanted to take it a little further. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I would just like to share a few more of the topics that we have here. Since we're statewide,
yes,
we might want people to drive over to Missoula for the weekend. We will have topics, of course, on a new theory of biological design by Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins from the Institute for Creation Research. We're going to talk about dinosaurs. We're going to talk about why the age of the earth matters, the Lake Missoula flood, and some of the drone research Dr. Horton's done. Things people wonder about: global warming. We're going to talk about the geological record and fossils and those kind of things. In fact, IBA will have a fossil and dinosaur bone display there that kids can go through. And on Saturday, there will be youth sessions, Dinosaurs, the Bible, and Fossils. Bill Federer will be talking to the young, believe it or not, talking to the young about the stories of miracles in American history. And we'll be talking about a lot of those things. And then also Saturday, a lot of a lot of conversation about our biblical foundations and Christian foundations of our country. We have David Barton coming into Montana again from Wall Builders, and he'll be talking a lot about why history matters. And for those that, for the question earlier about how politics and how all this fits together, David Barton will be sharing what is the duty of a Christian in politics and how we vote, and from a biblical world perspective. And so there's just lots of great, great topics. Bruce Malone from Search for the Truth Ministries will be here talking about the awe of creation and how to put that back in the science and education in our public schools. Things like that. So, debunking evolution and proving creation. And one of the big, big topics, did we get here evolving from apes? I just got to say it. That is a big, big topic out there. And so we'll be talking about evolution. And Dr. Tompkins, believe it or not, he is a geneticist from Institute for Creation Research. He has mapped out the human genome and the chimpanzee genome, and he will prove that we are not related the way we're taught in the public education system a lot, that we came from chimps and lemurs and apes and those kind of things. We're not related, and those will be fascinating conversations from one of the world's premier geneticists, Dr. Jeffrey Tompkins. So there's a little teaser there.
I guess so. But we have folks waiting on the line to visit with you, gentlemen, and Dan is up next. Dan, go ahead. What's on your mind, please?
Hey, thanks for having me. I got a few things going on. I want everybody to know there are lots of people in the state that are concerned about the rise of Christian nationalism. And I've attended two viewings of a movie called Bad Faith. One was at the Roxy, and the second time, happily, was at a Presbyterian church. So it's not just secular people who are concerned about it. There are a lot of people in churches who are like, we don't need Christian nationalism. We want a separation. And then for guys like Harry, I wanted to let him know that if he Googled Missoula Area Secular Society, we'd love to sit down and have some conversations with him. That would be excellent. Somebody mentioned that socialism and pretty soon the elite owns everything. Have you looked at the breakdown in America? The elite do own everything in America. 80% of stocks owned by 10% of the population. It's crazy. And then morality and the flood. Some talk about the flood. I've always wondered if anybody had a way to calculate how many babies were floating outside of Noah's Ark. And I want to know what the morality around that would be. All of those innocent, I would say, non-sinning babies all died in the flood. That's on your God. So that's all I had to say. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your response, please.
Great questions. Bill, could we get you to comment? I'm sure you're hearing about Christian nationalism. That term comes up quite a bit now, especially with the passing of Charlie Kirk and some of the things that were going on there. Bill, do you mind commenting on that?
Yeah, so nationalism is the opposite of globalism. There are people who are globalists, sort of like those people that the caller mentioned that own everything. They're globalists. Brock Chisholm was the first director of the World Health Organization, and he said, to achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their national patriotism.
Wow.
So globalists hate people who want to preserve their nation, and so they have done what's called projection. So they blame you for what they're doing. The second thing is nationalism is good or bad depending on the nation. So in socialist nations like the USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, nationalism is bad because there's no individual rights. Nazi stands for National Socialist Workers' Party. Nationalism is bad because there's no individual rights. In America, we're dedicated to individual rights. Rights come from a creator, and therefore the government's job is to guarantee to you your creator-given rights. So you have the freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, freedom of right to trial by a jury of your peers. These are all freedoms that are in our nation. So wanting to preserve our nation is different than other countries. So that's the second thing. Third thing is nationalism used to be called patriotism. Did you know that the word nationalism is not in Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary? The word patriotism is. Patriotism is the characteristic of a good citizen, love of one's country. Now, here's a thought. Why does the secular media call pro-life people anti-abortion? There's no pro-life group that calls itself anti-abortion. They call themselves pro-life. But why does the secular media insist on calling them anti-abortion? Negative word association, right? There are simple people that just believe what the media tells them. And so they call people that want to preserve their nation, that don't like globalism, they want to call them nationalism. But it's interesting. Abraham Lincoln's inaugural address, he said, intelligence, patriotism, Christianity are still competent to adjust in the best way all our present difficulty. Here's Lincoln saying patriotism and Christianity right next to each other in his inaugural. You have Franklin Roosevelt passing out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms by the millions to the World War II soldiers. Is anybody going to call Franklin Roosevelt a Christian nationalist, right? He's passing out New Testaments and he wants to preserve our nation. So we have to realize what is happening is called a psyops, a psychological operation. Globalists.
We're seconds away from a break. We're going to come back and continue this conversation for the next few minutes when we come back after this quick timeout. TalkBackers. Welcome back to Talk Back. We're talking with folks from the Institute for Biblical Authority, Faith, Family, and Freedom Conference coming up May 7th to the 10th at the Hilton Garden Inn. And let us continue. We have a caller on the line right now. Actually, has a question or a comment for you, gentlemen. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Say, let's let Bill finish what he was saying there before the break, Bill. And then we'll get to Jeff real
Bill,
quick.
Please go ahead.
Population numbers in 1965. 93% of Americans identified themselves as Christian, 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic, 3% of the country Jewish. But even as recent as 1965, 93% of the country identified itself as Christian. Now it's going down. But now it's interesting. Megan Basham did a study called Follow the Money, and she found out that the same globalists that are putting money into those movies trying to malign patriotic Christians as being nationalists, those same globalists are giving money to promote leadership of rural LGBTQ communities. So they're pushing LGBTQ in the rural areas because they want to turn out that vote, but yet they want to malign Christians to try to get them not to turn out politically.
Wow, gentlemen, your response to that.
I think it's just really, really important as we look at our country, as we look at our political races, to understand that a biblical worldview is very, very important, and the roots that this country has in that, and that the Institute for Biblical Authority, we want to emphasize and recognize the importance of truth. There is absolute truth, and we feel like it comes in the Bible, and that we just encourage people to study that and stay in that. So we can take the caller.
You bet. Let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
You're on, Jeff. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I can't believe that nobody has done this before. Steve, I'm so sorry. May the 4th be with you.
I leave those up to the cleverest man in our audience. That's Jeff. So go
ahead. Thank you, Jeff.
Two things really quickly. I've decided that I'm not a Republican or a conservative. I vote Catholic. And in that, the Catholic has a social teaching that has a form of social justice. But one of those one of the components of that social justice is subsidiarity, which says that works best, which works local. In other words, you try to solve a problem locally and you only escalate it up if you can't solve it locally. Whereas the government tries to fix things from a federal level on down, and we all know how well that works.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you wanted to comment on that. Also, are you going to discuss the this fascination that Christians have had since the beginning of Christianity with end times? Every generation believes that it lives in the end times, even though Jesus said that, you know, not the hour nor the day that's reserved for the Father. It doesn't stop us from saying, yeah, but maybe it's this time. I'm looking and I'm trying to read the tea leaves. And
Yep.
You know,
we're running out of
I know when my end times are coming. but I don't believe in end times for the world. So if you could talk to those people.
Gentlemen, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, please go ahead. We've got about 3 minutes.
Well, as far as end times go, though, that isn't our topic. Although I will tell you, Jeff, I would love to sit down and talk to you about that. But that's a whole other matter that we're not going to be taking up. And I do appreciate your topic on how you're handling things. You're voting by your beliefs. And I think that's really important concept.
Let's take a minute and talk about the conference itself. It's coming up here real quick. And give us the lowdown.
Yeah, a national conference with six national speakers coming back to Hilton and Missoula and here in Montana. May 7th, Thursday night, Glacial Lake Missoula field trip with Michael Lord and Dr. Horton. You need to go to IBA777.org to register for that because it is limited. We have a family National Day of Prayer worship night where we have churches getting together, and we are going to do as it started back with the Continental Congress, the National Day of Prayer, the tradition of praying over this country and praying over our Constitution and our government. You know, 50, I think it was 54 out of the 56 signers of the Declaration, and even same statistic with our Constitution, were believers. And I think 29 of the signers of the Declaration were trained as pastors. And so they definitely knew biblical foundations. But we have a family National Day of Prayer where we're going to pray for this country. And Friday, we have Science Supports the Bible sessions. It starts, the first session starts at 8:30. So you need to get here around 8-ish or so. There'll be resources in the lobby where you can take these resources home and study them on your own or with small groups.
And okay, then, again, when and where?
When and where? It is May 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Missoula, Montana.
All right. And, Bill, I want to say thank you for joining us. We appreciate we'll look forward to hearing from you as well. Dr. Horton, Mike Mueller, all here in the studio with us this morning. And we have Rob Nadelson coming up with us in the next hour. Those of you who are fans of Rob Nadelson, author and historian, former professor at the University of Montana. And of course, he'll be joining us in the 9 o'clock hour from 9 to 10. And his book, The Original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. We're going to find out just what edition is coming up. He's done four editions so far. So that's coming up, and we're looking forward to the next hour. And gentlemen, thank you for sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
We appreciate all of you, gentlemen. And we will be back after this quick timeout, so stay with us. Hey, good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to hour number two. Talk back for this Monday, May the 4th. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls and producing Talk Back. And we are always privileged to have with us, ladies and gentlemen, Professor Rob Nadelson, constitutional scholar and author of the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. And Rob, it's good to hear your voice again, sir. What's on? How are you?
I am great. I just got back from Montana, in fact, where I was privileged to hear your voice from stations in the Flathead Valley.
Wow.
And also in Billings. It was great.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that we're on the statewide network now, and we're very, very privileged to be speaking to so many more people than we were before, and we deeply appreciate that opportunity. But right now, we want to talk with Rob Nadelson, and we haven't talked to you for a while, a constitutional scholar and author. And so tell us what you've been up to, sir. What kind of research have you been taking care of?
Well, for those, particularly those outside the Missoula area who may not be familiar with me, I was a professor at the University of Montana Law School for many years. I was also active in Montana's civic life and political life, ran several successful ballot issues, ran for governor in 1996 and in 2000. And by trade, as you indicated, I'm a constitutional scholar. I'm affiliated with the Independence Institute, which is located in Denver. In fact, I'm sitting in Denver right now, but it seems I spend just as much time in Montana. Today is a good day, I think, to talk about the Supreme Court term, which is just about to end. It'll be ending at the end of next month. And there are a series of very interesting cases, Peter. As you know, there are several cases involving presidential power. Some of these cases are the typical struggles that presidents often wage against the courts and against the legislatures. Others come from the Trump administration's effort to pare down the bureaucratic state, the administrative state, by giving the elected president more power over unelected agencies. There are three very interesting First Amendment cases. Two of them arise out of states in which the office holders are very far left and they're trying to suppress speech with which they disagree. Another one deals with issues of campaign contributions and potentially has implications for dark money. There are two very interesting Second Amendment cases, one involving a Hawaii law that attempts to limit the mobility of people who are carrying weapons, another one, a federal law dealing with people who use illegal substances and have weapons. A Fourth Amendment case involving searches and seizures. I usually don't get involved in this subject because it's more criminal than constitutional sometimes, it seems. But this one comes out of Montana, Case versus Montana. Interesting because while the Supreme Court affirmed the Montana Supreme Court, both the opinion for the Supreme Court and Justice Sotomayor in a separate concurrence had some pretty harsh words about the bad reasoning of the Montana Supreme Court. In addition, the Fifth Amendment, a takings clause, very interesting takings clause case, a Seventh Amendment case that involves trial by jury if you are prosecuted by the Federal Communications Commission, and then 14th Amendment, the famous birthright citizenship case, and two controversies arising out of transgender laws, and then some very interesting election cases involving a collection of 14th, 15th Amendment issues and issues arising under statutes.
All right.
So it's been a very busy term.
Yeah, you definitely set the table for us. So, and we already have the phone lines beginning to fill up for you, Rob. As always, when Professor Rob Nadelson joins us on the phone, he's in Denver, and the phone lines are open at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Nancy and Harry are both waiting in line to visit with you, sir, as well as many others, of course, as the hour continues. We hope you'll join us. Just give us a call, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Rob Nadelson, our guest here on TalkBack.
Cold and flu season.
If you had to work over the weekend, don't worry. We've saved some sun for you as well. Dennis Bragg with your forecast as we look at warm, dry spring conditions persisting pretty much all week. Mostly sunny Monday through Thursday. Just a few afternoon clouds and calm winds as well. Afternoon highs will be in the mid to upper 60s today and tomorrow, so a little cooler than over the weekend, but by Wednesday, we'll be back into the mid 70s, even a few upper 70s toward the end of this week. Friday will be partly sunny, then back to clouds in the evening with a chance of rain returning next weekend.
Now, we tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Uh, Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talkback. Professor Rob Nadelson joining us on the phone right now from Denver, constitutional scholar and author. And already, I knew this would happen, the phone lines are already lighting up for you, Rob. So, Rob, we have Nancy on the line first. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Am I on?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Nancy. Oh, okay. Morning, Glory, everyone. And well, I didn't know. And good morning, Rob. And the Supreme Court, excellent topic. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about specifically the Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. There's a, she's very controversial, and there's a lot of talk about she got her appointment in the Supreme Court using an auto pen, and of course they didn't follow proper protocol. And we've all seen her in action. She's she has a twisted way of thinking about our Constitution and also about, generally speaking, law. And I have to agree. I don't believe this woman is really should be in our Supreme Court. I believe she's inferior in many, many ways. She doesn't have a superior intellect like our Supreme Court justices are supposed to have. And if there is a movement to rescind her appointment, how do you think this would go? I know it would be a lot of effort and take a while, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on Ketanji Brown Jackson, Rob.
Sure. By the way, Nancy, just out of curiosity, you're not from Musselshell County, are you?
I sure am.
It's great to talk to you again. I wanted to see who was Nancy from Roundup. It's wonderful to talk to you.
I am Nancy from Roundup, yeah.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. Okay, well, Ketanji Brown Jackson. The only way to get rid of her at this point is, well, there are really three ways. She could resign, of course. She could be impeached and removed from office, or her fellow justices could put pressure on her to try to induce her to resign. That third method may not sound like a very effective approach, but it has in fact been used with some success in the past when a justice really wasn't equal to the job. You know, the other justices get the poor victim in the room and they say, it's time to move on to better things. We got a, you know, a slush fund for you.
What now, are some of the tactics they're not inviting them to their birthday parties, or how does that,
yeah, something
how does
like that
work? How does that work?
I don't think it would work on Justice Thomas, but it has worked on some others. At any rate, conservatives have been very unhappy with the Ketanji Brown Jackson nomination. I'm not too happy with it. I will say that I don't think she's quite as bad as many conservatives claim. I don't think that she's an idiot or, you know, and it's very possible she may grow in office. And I hope she does. As for impeaching her, my own research convinces me that in order for her to be impeached, she would have to be guilty of a serious crime. That is to say, treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. And in this case, misdemeanor means high misdemeanor, which is a technical term for a serious crime that does not merit the death penalty. So I don't think that she could be impeached or removed from office for negligence, and I don't think you'd get a two-thirds vote of the Senate to remove her on that basis unless she was kind of a vegetable. So I guess what I'm saying here is that she's in office. She's there as long as she wants to stay. And we just have to make the best of it.
And it's quite literally a lifetime. It's a lifetime appointment, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. She also, you know, I don't think she's as bad as many conservatives say she is, because I've read some of her stuff, and sometimes she writes beautifully, and she writes in ways that are very consistent with the American tradition as we understand it. But conservative political activists who kind of, you know, have been dumping on her just the way liberal political activists dump on Justice Thomas.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Harry. Harry, thanks for holding. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi,
Harry.
Good morning, Rob. Yeah, a couple things. First off, there's a guy I heard say declare that the independence of Declaration of Independence, excuse me, is law. He said that, you know, that's obvious, but then he also pointed out that a couple Supreme Court justices didn't agree with that. do you think it's considered law? And the second point, during the Biden administration, you were quite incensed about what you thought was a censorship, or seemed like a rather indirect way of censorship, but you still thought it was. I'm wondering, how do you feel about the new administration? Seemed to be more direct. I mean, he calls out for Jimmy Kimmel to be fired, and the next day the FCC is threatening the licenses of ABC. So I'm curious, how do you feel about that?
Okay. Well, as far as the Declaration of Independence being law, it is international law and was essentially recognized as such in the Treaty of Paris of 1783 between King George III of England and the United States. It's not law in the sense that it's not positive internal law. In other words, you can't be prosecuted for violating the Declaration of Independence the way you could be prosecuted or removed from office for violating the Constitution. So the Declaration is best understood as an expression of international law and of natural law, where the Constitution and the statutes are best understood as positive law, that is, man-made law, and that's the kind that will get you in trouble if you disobey it. As far as the Biden administration and Trump administration, Harry, I don't think they're comparable at all. The methods used by the Biden administration were not indirect. They were direct. They had a guy in the White House, at least one of them, in the White House, calling up social media companies, telling them to take stuff down, right? You had efforts by Biden, for example, to require everyone in the country to take a vaccine that they may not have wanted to take. He signed executive orders purporting to require 100 million people to take a vaccine. This overreach of power exceeded anything in American history, at least peacetime history. As far as the Trump administration is concerned,
we're up against a hard break here. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Rob Nadelson joining us until 10 o'clock this morning. What? I'm sorry?
So shall I finish when we get back?
Yeah, we'll finish when you get back. Again, 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. And Rob Nadelson joining us.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. As expected, Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell asking the state's highest court to step into the escalating dispute over whether state and federal officials should have clear access to records as they pursue immigration enforcement. Last week, Attorney General Austin Knutson said he was going to assume supervisory control over the office, complaining Cromwell's refusal to release the records is a violation of state law. Now, Cromwell is filing a petition with the Montana Supreme Court seeking to block Knutson's directive. She'll be asking the justices whether ICE agents can bypass state law to access confidential criminal justice information without a court order. Tensions flared outside Gallatin High School Friday as dozens of students walked out of class to protest nationwide ICE raids. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports that roughly 50 demonstrators marched to Diamond Park, met by counter-protesters flying Trump flags from vehicles. District officials say while they remain neutral on the cause, any student who walked out will receive an unexcused absence unless cleared by a parent. Montana's solid waste operators are signaling a new era in recycling, saying newer equipment and options making it possible to reuse more materials. Republic Services Municipal Manager Megan Redman in Missoula says the company just invested millions of dollars in a new recycling center in Nevada, and that's improved the options for Montana residents to turn in their waste.
Yes, that's true. And I think we are entering a new era of recycling. In this day and age, there are a lot more options. There's a lot more accessibility. And that's one of the big goals for us building sustainable communities is being able to have that availability, especially for our rural customers, to be able to come in and bring all different types of materials. You know, when they're making their monthly Costco run, they can bring in some things that they've collected over the month and be able to recycle that versus sending everything to the landfills. And that way we're able to meet some of those community goals of more sustainability as well.
For more on these stories and others around Montana, download the Montana State News app or visit montanastatenews.com.
Elena had another asthma attack. She's really sad to miss school again.
Asthma can be triggered by allergens from common pests.
I just can't shake this fever.
Mosquito bites can cause West Nile and Zika virus infections.
Sorry, boss. I'm going to be out of work for a while.
The CDC estimates that more than 300,000 Lyme disease cases spread by ticks occur in the U.S. each year. Don't let pests force you to take a sick day. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. Our guest on the phone, Professor Rob Nadelson, a constitutional scholar and author, and we have folks waiting on the line to visit with you, sir. Oh, go ahead.
Rob, you were going to finish. Sorry, we cut you off there.
Yes,
with that heartbreak. You were going to mention Trump, right?
Please.
Yeah, Harry had a really good question, which was that MI is upset with the Trump administration's assaults on civil liberty as with the Biden administration. And the point I was making is that they're not in the same ballpark. I mean, obviously, I don't agree with President Trump calling for the firing of somebody based on what he said. But on the other hand, it's kind of in the American tradition, except that stuff in the Johnson administration, like it went on behind the scenes. I mean, those kinds of heavy-handed things. The Biden administration was in a class by itself, at least among peacetime presidencies. There were something like 50 members of the Biden administration who undertook the job of attempting censorship of social media. The most famous was a guy named Rob Flaherty, for example, who was constantly apparently on the phone with social media companies telling them to take stuff down that the Biden administration disagreed with. So that was and that's only one example, this full-throated assault on the First Amendment. John Eastman, a distinguished constitutional scholar who served as President Trump's attorney in his final days in office, was walking down the street one day, suddenly found himself surrounded by FBI people who took away his cell phone without explanation. Just took it, never, as far as I know, never returned it. Pro-life activists suddenly woke up early in the morning to find their houses being stormed by SWAT teams. I mean, this kind of stuff was really unprecedented. I think it is one of several reasons why Joe Biden will go down in history, probably as among the worst, if not the worst president America has ever suffered.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Mike. Mike, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Hello?
You're on, Mike. Hey, go ahead, please.
Okay, thanks. Hey, Rob, last time you were on, you described how you became a Trump supporter after the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt. And then you went on to describe something I don't recall, that Bill Clinton had a perceived assassination attempt, that he thought there was a gunshot. And you said he flinched and ducked. And then you said he was a coward. And I would argue, I don't know how he could be a coward. He married Hillary.
It was gutsy, right? You know, it was a little bit, what I said, Mike, was a little more nuanced than that. I did not vote for Trump in 2016. I voted for a third-party candidate. I did very reluctantly vote for him in 2020. However, when he was running in 2024, I turned... What happened really was that my respect for him as a person significantly increased as a result of his conduct during the assassination attempt. But I'm still critical of him from time to time, as is illustrated by the answer I just gave to the last caller. You know, I just criticized him. So, but I do have a good deal more respect for him than I had, say, 8 years ago.
Okay, let's get another call in before we take a break. And Mike is waiting on the line. Mike, good morning. Go ahead, Nick.
That was Mike. We got Rick and Ronan.
Rick, you're calling from Ronan. Good morning, sir. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, if I could, I'd like to go back to the discussion on Justice Brown. And my question is in the context of my deep concern of this notion of judicial supremacy. And you had discussed the notion of Supreme Court justices and federal judges serving for life. And I'm just wondering, Rob, if you see any significance in the fact that the U.S. Constitution does not convey that federal judges serve for life, but rather that they hold their terms, their office, during good behavior. Is there a significance there? I sometimes see a reluctance to initiate impeachment procedures because there seems to be an automatic assumption that the Constitution establishes that these judges serve for life.
Rob, we got about a minute and a half.
First, let me say I recognize your voice from my long experience in Montana affairs, and I want to say I'm honored to talk to you again. And your question is an excellent one. Service during good behavior is a direct English translation of a Latin term, quam diu bene gesserit. Which means so long as he shall have conducted himself well, which is essentially a proxy for impeachment. In other words, so long as he's not impeached. So they do serve for life, of course, unless they're impeached and removed from office. As I've expressed on the radio before, I personally favor imposition of term limits for Supreme Court justices. I'd give a generous term, maybe 18 years, but there would be only one term. And the reason for that is that life expectancy has increased enormously since the time the Constitution was written. The first people appointed to the Supreme Court, those appointed in the 1790s, served an average of...
Rob, hold on to that point, because we're coming up against the hard break. I want you to be able to finish that completely when we come back from the break. Rob Nadelson, our guest from the Independence Institute. We're going to come right back and continue. He'll be on with us till 10 o'clock this morning, 721-1290, 406-721-1290 is our number.
Hey, Boo. For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Talk Back for this Monday, May 4th. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christians and taking your phone calls this morning. Our guest on the phone is Rob Nadelson, constitutional scholar and author. The original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. And folks have been waiting very patiently on the phone. So Jeff is up next. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Can I finish my answer to the last question, Peter? Please do.
By the way, just for listeners, if it sounded like Peter was being rude and cutting me off, we're all getting used to a new schedule here. And so Peter, unfortunately, takes a little getting used to. The last caller raised the issue of lifetime terms for Supreme Court justices. And I said, the world has changed. Life expectancies are a lot longer. when the first justices were appointed to the Supreme Court, they only served an average of about 8 years. Now they serve on the average of something like 35 years. And so we can maintain judicial independence, but also restore something more like the original balance through a constitutional amendment, providing for, say, a single long term for each Supreme Court justice. One last point, the caller mentioned judicial supremacy. Judicial supremacy is the notion that the Supreme Court and only the Supreme Court can determine constitutional issues. That's often been stated by the Montana Supreme Court. It is completely wrong for a whole lot of reasons we could go into if a caller wants to hear it. It's just that there is no such thing really as judicial supremacy. The supremacy belongs to the people.
Is there a possible cognitive test that could be given as the justices go year to year?
You could give such a test. I suppose you could probably even mandate it, but actually giving it teeth by requiring the justice to withdraw would require a constitutional amendment.
Gotcha. All right. 721-1290 is our number. Rob Nadelson, our guest, and Jeff has been waiting very patiently. Jeff, you're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Rob. Great to talk to you again. There's so many things out there right now in this term that we talk about, but the two that I'd like to ask you about is Louisiana v. Calais, which was the majority-minority districts and redistricting that just got struck down. I think it actually invalidates part of the Voting Rights Act that says that yes. That you can set things up. So I'd like to hear what you have to say about that. And also, if you have read any of the tea leaves on whether or not birthright citizenship, how that decision is going to go, I don't know if you keep your ear to the ground on that or not, but if you do, if you could enlighten the rest of us.
All right, we've got about 2 minutes and 30 seconds before the hard break, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, these are both 14th Amendment cases, and they're both extremely complicated. I don't know what the court's going to do on birthright citizenship. There are about three different directions that they could go. As I've mentioned on the show before, my own preferred direction is somewhat in between the idea that anybody born in the country is therefore a citizen on the one extreme, and the idea that only the Trump administration view that only children of citizens and permanent residents are citizens. I think that the actual answer is somewhere in between, although I do not believe that the child of an illegal alien qualifies as a birthright citizen. On the Calais case, that's a tough one. You see, the Voting Rights Act was passed back in 1965 at a time when the southern states were using all kinds of devices to prevent African Americans from voting. Well, the circumstances that applied then under the statute are a little different from the circumstances that applied now. In the interim, the Supreme Court has also said that it's okay for a legislature to gerrymander for partisan purposes to benefit their political position, but it's not okay to gerrymander for race purposes. The problem is that almost all African Americans vote Democrat. And so when you've got a Republican legislature and you're gerrymandering to benefit Republicans, then that necessarily is going to hurt African-American voters. And essentially what the Supreme Court said is don't pretend that a political gerrymandering case is a racial gerrymandering case. In order to create districts for any particular group, you have to meet a very, very high burden, and the particular map that was an issue was one that the Louisiana legislature did not have to follow. It did not have to create two explicitly African-American majority districts.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial. Go ahead. We're going to take a quick commercial break. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. We would love to have you be a part of the show with Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, returning in just a moment.
Cold showers?
If you served, we want you to get the health care and benefits you earned. We want you to come to VA.
There's never been a better time to apply. Under a new law called the PACT Act,
We've expanded VA care and benefits to millions of people who served and their survivors. No matter where you served or how long you served, check out va.gov/PACT to learn more about what VA can do for you and your family. Come to VA.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talkback. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen producing Talkback this morning. Our special guest on the phone, of course, Rob Nadelson, Professor Rob Nadelson. His book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant,
the current edition, the fourth edition, is The Original Constitution, The Meaning of America's Supreme Law. And if you go to Amazon or another bookseller looking for it, make sure you get the edition that shows the Constitutional Convention. It's a picture of the Constitutional Convention. If you get one of the earlier editions, you'll probably pay the same, but you won't get information quite as up to date.
Good to know. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. Rick has been waiting very patiently through the break. So, Rick, good morning. You're on with Rob Nadelson. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, the word impeachment seems to be bantered around nowadays like somebody playing with a tennis ball. I was wondering, the Democrats seem to use impeachment as a legislative tool instead of a bipartisan tool for punishment of a president or a justice or anything like that. Even Joe Biden, there was never going to be a serious impeachment of Joe Biden, and I don't think Joe Biden would have been impeached for breaking the law. It would have been his health concerns. Even he wasn't impeached. There's a time called Capaquiddick, where Senator Kennedy, you know, he was responsible for the killing of a young girl. I don't think he was
very even censured.
Yeah, I don't even think he was censured, much less impeached. When will the word impeachment go back in the box where it should be for high crimes and misdemeanors instead of I'm just dissatisfied with this particular person in office and so let's let him impeach him? It's a very serious crime, and I think using it as a legislative tool is not right.
You know, it's interesting you should raise this. First, with respect to Senator Kennedy, because he was a senator, he was not subject to impeachment. The remedy for getting rid of somebody who does something wrong, if he's a U.S. senator, is to be evicted by a two-thirds vote of his own house. It's executive and judicial officers that can be impeached and removed from office. I actually did a study of this a few years ago because there was a lot of controversy. The Constitution says that a president can be removed for treason, or for bribery, or for other high crimes, which means other high felonies, or misdemeanors, and the term was understood that the term high also goes with the term misdemeanors. And high misdemeanors is a technical term that means serious crimes not meriting the death penalty. It's not a telephone call that might have been ill-advised, such as the one that President Trump made in his first term. It's not policy differences. It is, in fact, and again, this is unlike the English system of impeachment, it is designed to be limited to removal for serious crimes. When Joe Biden was president, I was contacted by a staffer at a congressional office asking if I would help with the pending impeachment that the congressman had for Joe Biden. And I said, no, I think that Joe Biden's administration is repugnant, but I don't see that he's committed any high crimes and misdemeanors, and I refuse to be part of it. So it does have to go back in the box. How it goes back in the box, I don't know, but it's the job of people like me to educate on what the Constitution actually means, and if there are enough of us out there doing that, then hopefully there'll be some appreciation for the limits of impeachment.
You bet. Now, I'm really interested in, you have two Second Amendment cases that are going before the U.S. Supreme Court. So if you could share some of those, please.
Yeah, very quickly. One of them comes out of a Hawaii law. When the U.S. Supreme Court said that you can't deny a person a right to carry arms just for any reason, that there's got to be a good reason, the Hawaii legislature, which is anti-Second Amendment, said, well, we'll pass a statute, and they did, and the statute says that you cannot go onto private property with a gun unless there's a sign there or explicit permission for you to do so. So if, for example, you've got a rifle in your car trunk, you can't go to a gas station unless the gas station has a sign which says gun owners welcome here. I can't see that law surviving the Supreme Court. I mean, and to understand why that's the case, compare that to, let's say, the First Amendment. Could a state pass a law saying that you can't go to somebody's house in order to solicit a signature on a petition unless he had a sign up saying petitioners welcome here? I mean, a law like that wouldn't survive the First Amendment. So this law is not going to survive under the Second, I think. The other one involves a federal law which says that users of illicit drugs may not carry arms. That law may be constitutional if it's interpreted narrowly by the court. Whether it will be interpreted narrowly by the court, I don't know. I don't know how the court's going to treat it.
And, we also are still working with Case versus Montana. I know you had some views on that.
Yeah, Case in this case is a man's name, Trevor Case. He was... it's a Fourth Amendment decision. That is to say, it deals with searches and seizures. The police, fearing that Mr. Case had attempted suicide, broke into his house. And when they broke into his house, he shot him. You know, he shot the police. Mm. And he was prosecuted and convicted for assaulting a peace officer. And his argument was that the police did not have probable cause to search his home. And in a unanimous decision written by Justice Kagan, the court said, "Well, you know, the probable cause standard is used when you're searching for criminal evidence of a crime, not when you're trying to go in and help someone." Now, they affirmed the decision of the Montana Supreme Court in the case, which was that the police had acted correctly, but they were quite critical of the reasoning of the Montana Supreme Court. They said the Montana Supreme Court applied a doctrine that's called the community caretaker doctrine that is not part of constitutional law. Yep. And that the Supreme Court of Montana never should have applied. It's another slap down.
We're going to come right back. We have more with Rob Nadelson to wrap things up. We'll be back after this.
This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided. Except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Welcome back to Talk Back. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Our guest on the phone is Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute. And Rob, I know here with the time growing short, we've got about 6 minutes left in our time together. You're working on some First Amendment cases. If you could share that with us, please.
Well, I'm not working on them, but the Supreme Court is.
Okay.
So let's go through. There are three of them this term. One's already been two have already been decided. One is pending. The pending one is of interest to anybody who's concerned about the rise of dark money in politics or is concerned about the fact that billionaires increasingly are buying themselves political candidates and political issues. The reason that is happening is because, and I think the answer to this is pretty clear, the reason you see so much dark money coming in and the reason you see
so many billionaires buying their way into politics is that federal and state campaign finance laws have weakened the political parties. Traditionally, candidates relied largely on the political party that endorsed them for elections. And specifically, that federal law prohibits a political party from coordinating its expenditures, from coordinating its campaign with a candidate, unless certain conditions are met. Well, in a case called National Republican Senatorial Committee versus Federal Elections Commission, the question of the constitutionality of this no coordination law has now come up. The no coordination law was upheld in a 5-4 decision 25 years ago in a decision written by Justice Souter, one of the weaker justices of modern times. I think that's a very good possibility that a majority of the court may want to reverse that decision, strike down some of the campaign finance law that impairs political parties. Political parties are the way traditionally that ordinary people participate in politics, even if they don't have a lot of money. And weakening them has done nothing but strengthen the hands of billionaires. The other two cases arise in very deep blue states, Colorado and New Jersey, where officials have basically declared war on conservative views of which they disagree. The court has issued its opinion in one of those cases, Childs versus Salazar, in which it struck down a Colorado law that purported to prohibit mental health therapists from helping people identify with their biological gender. The state of Colorado had said it's fine for the therapist who wants the person to transition to a different gender, but if the therapist wants to help the person transition back to his original gender, you can't do that. Well, the response of the Supreme Court was, you can't do that. That violates the free speech rights of the therapists. The other case, First Choice Women's Resource Centers versus Davenport, involved an attack by the New Jersey Attorney General on pro-life people, specifically on pregnancy crisis centers. The Attorney General in that state set up something called the Reproductive Rights Strike Force, which was basically designed to attack these centers. And they sent a subpoena to one of the crisis pregnancy centers demanding demanding that it produce all of its donors, a list of all of its donors and their addresses and how much they gave and so forth, a clear violation of the right to free association. In a unanimous opinion, the court held that the Crisis Pregnancy Center had standing to attack that subpoena. And I recommend to everybody the opinion written by Justice Gorsuch. It really is an outstanding explanation for all the members of the court. Remember, this is unanimous opinion as to why the right of association is embedded in the First Amendment and why it's so important.
Well, Rob, we have a little less than 2 minutes left, so some final comments to wrap up.
Sure, absolutely. Those of you who are interested in reading what I've written, Peter has already mentioned my book, The Original Constitution, that's available on Amazon. I also have a website, which is natelsonrob.com. Natelson is N-A-T-E-L-S-O-N. It reverses my name because somebody went ahead and bought the URL for Rob Natelson. So this is natelsonrob.com. It includes everything I've written on constitutional issues almost. And of particular interest is a page that collects documents from the ratification of the Montana Constitution. Got a lot of people running around Montana right now basically doing a spin job on the Montana Constitution. This page takes you to the actual documents, and you can see how the Constitution was represented to the people, which is somewhat different from how the Montana Constitution is being applied or spun today.
So again, what it's actually said and meant, right? With the Montana Constitution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rob, it is always a great pleasure to visit with you, and we look forward to our next visit and hope that you are and your family are well, sir.
First Monday of the month and whenever I'm in town.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, Rob Nadelson, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to what's coming up on Tuesday's show, please.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll start with open phones for the first half hour or so, and then we'll have global hotspots with Mirdad Kia and Michael Mayer, and that'll be from 8:30 to 10.
All right, again, thanks for all your calls this morning. Again, the number 406-721-1290 for TalkBack, and we're here every weekday from 8 to 10, and we hope that you will take the time to